all you beautiful body bastards, and welcome back to Body Ballads, where we look at many of the forgotten, hilarious, and often dirty old songs of the past. Along the way, we'll explore all those things that make life just a bit more interesting. There's trickery, infidelity, loving, drinking, fighting, and while we dig into these songs, we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Archetypes, history, folklore, and share the way these songs connect with the present. A fair warning before we begin, this show does discuss adult themes and topics, including violence, sex, and my own foul mouth. And as always, make sure to check the show notes for links, including bodyballads.com, where you can share your creations with me and see the show transcripts and additional links if you're curious to learn more. And with that said, let's get to today's episode. Welcome back, everyone, to what is probably going to be a very personal and very interesting episode. Today we're going to look at a really important ballad that shows how ballads and songs were used to communicate crime reports and links earlier murder ballads as a way of tracking crime. Murder ballads have never lost status and popularity, as shown by songs like Pretty Polly. But there are many, many more, and as current podcast and television ratings show, true crime still fascinates us. In fact, the way I learned of this ballad wasn't through digging through databases, but through a documentary series called A Very British Murder, which follows the fascination with murder mysteries in the British kind of culture. So it looks at stuff like Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes. It's great. Linked it in the show notes. Anyways, so when the first episode started to talk about the importance of broadsheets and spreading news and that there had been a ballad that also inspired a play that's still running, I knew I had to go ahead and cover this one. And then I discovered that the all-amazing Tom Waits has a song called Murder in the Red Barn that was inspired by this same ballad and murder trial. I mean, talk about meant for this podcast. It was also a topic very close to me as it mimics so much of what happened to my own aunt. But before we talk about that, let's look at the original ballad, and then we'll talk a bit more about the history, including my own personal one. So this is titled The Murder of Maria Martin. Come all you thoughtless young men, a warning take by me, and think upon my unhappy fate to be hanged upon a tree. My name is William Corder, to you I do declare, I courted Maria Martin, most beautiful and fair. I promised I would marry her upon a certain day. Instead of that, I was resolved to take her life away. I went into her father's house the 18th day of May, saying my dear Maria will fix the wedding day. If yon will meet me at the Red Barn as sure as I have life, I will take you to Ipswich Town and there make you my wife. I then went home and fetched my gun, my pickaxe and my spade. I went into the Red Barn, and there I dug her grave. With heart so light, she thought no harm to meet me there she did go. He murdered her all in the barn and laid her body low. After the horrid deed was done, she lay weltering in her gore. Her bleeding, mangled body he buried under the Red Barn floor. Now all things being silent, her spirit could not rest. She appeared unto her mother, who suckled her at her breast. For many a long month or more, her mind being sore pressed, neither night nor day she could take any rest. Her mother's mind being so disturbed, she dreamt three nights over. Her daughter she lay murdered beneath the Red Barn floor. She sent her father to the barn when he the ground did thrust, and there he found his daughter mingling with the dust. My trial is hard, I could not stand, most woeful was the sight. When her jawbone was brought to prove, which pierced my heart quite. Her aged father standing by, likewise his loving wife, and in her grief her hair she tore, she scarcely could keep life. Adieu, adieu, my loving friends, my glass is almost run. On Monday next will be my last, when I am to be banged. So you young men who do pass by with pity, look on me. For murdering Mariah Martin, I was hanged upon the tree. So the original version does a good job of capturing what happened. Well, except for a couple of small things that are different, which is the fact that the mother is, in the real story, is not her maternal mother. It's her stepmother, who is also only like a year or two older than her. And the other thing that is very interesting to note in this, and this deals more in a technical writing aspect that I think is worth talking about, is that everything is in first person until it gets to the part where the murder actually happens. So it's all in first person, up until, well, when I find my place again. Oh, he murdered her all in the barn. It doesn't say I murdered her in the barn. Everything else, and then it's he murdered her. I think this is an interesting subconscious choice by the author to separate themselves from the actual act of murder. I think whoever wrote this ballad obviously found it very hard to write I murdered her in the barn. Anyway, so getting back to the differences, there are a few things it doesn't include, and it goes to prove why I get fascinated with what isn't said in these earlier murder ballads. The other reason is what happened with my own aunt when I was about 16. I haven't shared this story here yet, and though I've hinted at it, it's one I only tend to share when absolutely necessary in my personal life. Because to be honest, it makes people hella uncomfortable, and it's not easy on me either. So my aunt had struggled with dependence issues since she was in high school. She was naturally very outgoing and artistic person, so she was naturally drawn to groups that tended to live a little wild. But also she was doing a lot of self-medicating as a result of abandonment and mental abuse issues at home. My mother, too, suffered from abuse issues, but luckily she was able to pull herself out of it. My aunt's usage led her to becoming involved with one of her crack dealers, who, no surprise, was violent. She tried to run away from him many times, but each time he'd find her, knock her out, drag her back. He eventually took to threatening the family, and that if she left, he would set my grandparents' home on fire and shoot anyone who ran out. Now, to put some perspective on this, both me and my cousin, her eldest son, lived with my grandparents at that time. Us, as well as my uncle, with cerebral palsy. So she stayed. But no matter what was happening, she always called at least every couple of weeks to check in on, you know, say that she was okay, see how everyone was doing. Then she wasn't calling. And my grandmother was having horrible dreams that she never really gave details of, but they were terrifying her. She called the boyfriend's mother, trying to get in touch with my aunt, because that was the only way to get in touch with her, because her boyfriend and where they lived, they did not have a phone, and this was the time before cell phones. And the mother would always just say that she was around, and she would say she'd have her call us back. 3 months went by, and then the police showed up at our door. The abusive dealer boyfriend had strangled her to death and then had his cousin help him bury her in a shallow grave. A grave she stayed in for 3 months until the cousin, unable to take the guilt anymore, came forward. I don't remember much from that night other than sitting in silence and shock with my cousin as my grandmother wailed. But perhaps this is why I became obsessed with these songs. It shows that this experience isn't a once-in-a-while thing, but something that happens often enough to become an archetypal story, one that still captures our attention. So I both Shirley Collins and Tom Waits have covered the versions of this story. I'd actually not heard the Shirley Collins version, which is pretty much word-for-word to the original, but it's really worth a listen, especially if you're a fan of bands like Steel Eye Span and Fairport Convention, which I won't lie, are two of my all-time faves. Anyways, the murder of Maria, or what will be eventually referred to as the murder in the Red Barn. The relatively full story is that Maria was a poor girl in the village of Posted in Suffolk County. William Corder was the son of a wealthy farmer and would have been a catch for Maria, which is likely why her first child had been by William's older brother, though that child did die shortly after birth. Which, quick side note, because this is something that bucks the tits off me, is when people talk about average lifespan in the past. For some reason, people will hear that the average lifespan was mid-50s and think nobody lived past 60. So not true. The issue was that so many died young. Close to 1 in 3 children would die before the age of 1. Then count in all those childhood accidents that would have killed before modern medicine. I'm such a kid. I would have died at 14 from asthmatic bronchitis. I almost did today. My older sister would have likely died from an infection from the handful of broken bones she got from always thinking she could fly off stuff. My youngest would have probably died from cat scratch fever. Yes, it is real. That would mean that out of 4 sisters, only one of us would have survived. So Maria, having already lost a child with William's older brother, and she has also had a child with a wealthy member of the aristocracy who would send money to care for the child but would have nothing to do with it because, you know, ew, peasants. Anyways, here's what I love about this story. In none of the accounts I've found does anyone bring up these past children out of wedlock as a way to justify the murder. There's no sentiment of her being a morally low woman who had a natural end due to her actions and way of life. There's none of that. As for William, he was known as a bit of a dick. He would forge checks, steal, and even steal from his own family to get cash. He was such a shit that the local constable was marked as saying, "I'll be damned if he will not be hung some of these days." Now, he did go off to London for a bit, but all of his brothers and father died within a year and a half of each other, meaning he was the only one left to manage the family farm. And that's when he starts seeing Maria and gets her pregnant. I think I just said Maria instead of Mariah. Sorry, correction. Mariah. Anyway, despite having worked to keep their affair a secret, he still agreed to marry her, even though the child had died. By the by, there are those who argue that it's possible that the child was also murdered. Anyways, as I said, William, as a landowner, would have been a hell of a catch for Mariah. And he told her the local authorities were after her for having another child out of wedlock. So when he asks her to elope, she of course agrees. He has her sneak off and meet him in the Red Barn. All of this was said in front of her stepmother, Anne. After this, he would always return without her, claiming she was busy and that was why she hadn't returned any letters, or the letters had gotten lost, or there was always some reason why nobody had heard from her. Now, eventually Anne, her stepmother, began having horrible dreams that Mariah was dead and buried in the Red Barn. The dreams became so constant that she finally convinced Mariah's father to go look. Now, there are some grisly descriptions of what happened when they discovered the body, which I'm not going to cover here, but the green scarf around the neck identified Mariah because not only was she wearing it when Anne saw her last, it also belonged to William. They would eventually track William down where he was running a hotel with his new wife. A wife he met by placing an ad for a wife in the newspaper. There they found 2 pistols that were purchased the same day that Mariah had been murdered. The defense would argue that Mariah knew about some of William's more shady dealings and that had given her the ability to blackmail him, and that is why he killed her. I mean, this is primetime TV today, and this was 1828, almost 200 years ago. He would eventually confess to the murder, claiming he accidentally shot her in the eye during an argument. Yeah. Anyway, here's where times get very, very different. After he was hung, William's body was dissected and put on display in the courtroom for everyone to come and see. Over 5,000 people came to see his body laid out, and his skeleton was later used as a learning skeleton at West Suffolk Hospital. Eventually, over the course of 200 years, his skeleton would be moved to the Royal College of Surgeons, where it would stay until about 2004, when his family requested it be cremated. And it was. Now, I've linked the Murderpedia page on this case because there is so much more to this fascinating stuff, and I don't have time for all of it here. What I do have time for is a more modern variation on the pregnant and abandoned theme. I actually just came across this one while writing up this episode, and it was too perfect a comparison to not include. It's called Winter's Going, and it's by Bonnie Dobson. Winter's going and the leaves turn green. I remember times that we have seen. I cannot rid myself of old memories. Winter's going and the leaves turn green. Young woman crying in the soft spring light. Pain in her body makes her weep for the night. Flowers round her can bring her delight. Young woman crying in the soft spring light. Summer will come and where will I hide? Summer will come and where will I hide? Child that I'm carrying can't be demonized. Summer will come and where will I hide? You said you loved me and I believed. You said you'd marry me and I believed. You said you'd come back and I believed. You said you loved me and I believed. Autumn will come and I'll know what I'll do. Autumn will come and I'll know what I'll do. I'll kill your baby and then I'll kill you. Autumn will come, and I know what I'll do. Now, I know that is a bit Medea-esque, but I do love the script, when the script is flipped like this. I think it's because we all think we know how something will happen, because we've seen the pattern so many times. Then out of nowhere, the pattern changes. There's a shift, and I live for these little nuggets. It's not the traditional what you expect when the girl's gotten pregnant out of wedlock lock and the guy decides to fix his own problem and kills the woman and the baby. Nope, here's the woman fixes the problem by killing the father and the child. I mean, it's not a beautiful, like, sweet sentiment, but it's different. And with that said, that's where I'm going to leave you, because I encourage you to keep an eye out for these oddities and breaks in the patterns and molds. And as always, if you find any inspiration in these and use them to create some kind of art or work of your own, please share it with me at bodyballads@gmail.com. And until next time, stay saucy.